If they want to continue to go the route of taking over Syria, they can do that. But they cannot do it with chemical weapons. They can't do it assaulting their people. And we're not going to fall for it. If there are chemical weapons that are used, we know exactly who's going to use them. And this is the exact same playbook that Russia and Iran and Assad have used every time. And the OPC.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So I don't know if you really heard what she said there, for those that caught that intro video, which will be in the show notes. Nikki Haley asserting the fact that if something happens, we already know who it is. That's not hyperbole. This is literally them saying, as the representative of the United States for the United Nations, asserting that before something takes place, we already know who the culprit is. This is propaganda, pure and simple, asserting what they want to be the case to be the case. This is desperation. And clearly it's because of so many people recognizing not only their lies and deceptions of the past in regard to many different places, which we recently touched on in the last show about Afghanistan, knowing that the entire war is based on a lie. Pretty much all of them we could point out are based on aggressive propaganda. Most Syria, more than any that I can see in recent memory, what we've been seeing so far, aggressive propaganda debunked time and time again. And now they're coming back asserting, you know, just in case you weren't aware, after the 11 different times over the past 3 weeks that we've asserted the fact that if anybody uses chemical weapons, that we're going to do something. Just to reiterate that yet again, no matter what happens, if there's a chemical weapon attack, we already know who it's going to be. Very, very, very revealing. And I hope you guys all catch that, who are, you know, able to stand back and really acknowledge what's being said there. And as always, right on cue with their excellent commentary about the absurdity of these kind of events, especially in regard to Nikki Haley and the United Nations and the United States of America and their horrendous allies of the day, is an article coming from Caitlin Johnstone, really just nailing this down. And this image really, really made my morning, and I hope it does for you as well, entitled Psychic Nikki Haley: If There's a Future Chemical Weapons Attack, Assad Did It. And that image there really did it for me, because of course it's not right to belittle people just for the sake of making a message, but or getting a message across. But the point here is that these people are ridiculous. And what they're doing is absurd. And so in my mind, this is perfectly appropriate, because it really is this ridiculous. And I hope that that's getting across to you. And I hope that she sees this and recognizes, I mean, I argue they already know how ridiculous what they're saying is, truly. And they just don't care. They're just forcing the narrative, because that's what their jobs are, to force the narrative, propaganda, to manipulate the American people into doing what they think is best for their agenda. Not for you, not for the people, not for the world, but for their political agenda. And it really is this ridiculous. So I really love this image. And this is a fantastic article, as always, by Caitlin Johnstone. Now, UN ambassador, and this is how she begins: UN ambassador and clairvoyant prognosticator of the transmundane, Nikki Haley, has foreseen that if there are any future chemical weapons attacks in the Syrian province of Idlib, it will most definitely be the Syrian government that is responsible, and not the multiple terrorist factions in the area. By the way, I don't need to replay that video yet again of the State Department themselves literally saying that Idlib is the strongest al-Qaeda stronghold in Syria, and that's a big problem. We've made that pretty clear so far. So it is terrorist factions holding these civilians hostage in Idlib. That's the reality. U.S.-backed, Israel-backed, Saudi-backed terrorist factions. Goes on, it says, quote, if they want to continue to go the route of taking over Syria, this is what she said in the beginning, they can do that, which, weirdly enough, we've seen Heather Nauert and many others already assert, even the statement from the White House, that that's kind of not the case, that they're going to respond accordingly to action in general. But anyway, she goes on to say, but they cannot do it with chemical weapons. They cannot do it assaulting their people. if we're going to, and we're not going to fall for it. If there are chemical weapons that are used, we know exactly who's going to use them. Again, just predicting the future, apparently. Now, this is what I love about Caitlin Johnstone's work. She lays this out in crystal clear perspective for you all. And truly, come to your own conclusions here, regardless of what I think. You tell me which one of these two possibilities are more likely. Now, first one, she lays out possibility one, that actual literal terrorist factions occupying Idlib are on the cusp of defeat with nowhere to escape. They know for a fact that the U.S. and its allies have launched repeated attacks on the Syrian government following chemical weapons allegations without first waiting for an investigation into those allegations. All very easily verifiable facts of the past. They also know for a fact that multiple high-level officials in the Western Alliance have stated repeatedly that they will carry out aggressive attacks against the Syrian government in retaliation for any perceived chemical weapons attacks. As she just said, that they already know who it is. They don't know investigation needed. And thanks to the public prognostications from Madam Haley's crystal ball, they also know that the Syrian government has already been assigned blame for any such attack in advance. Knowing all of these things, with their backs against the wall, with the absolute certainty that getting the Western Military Alliance on their side is their last and only chance, they get their hands on some chemical weapons and kill some of the civilians they've already captured. Seems plausible. Possibility number two. On the cusp of victory, the Assad government decides to do the one thing that risks a U.S.-led regime change military intervention in order to accomplish the crucial strategic masterstroke of killing a few kids with chlorine or sarin in front of a bunch of white helmet cameras. It's really that ridiculous. Like, really, when you stand back and look at the information that's all readily available everywhere from our shows and otherwise, that's what we're looking at here. And they're asserting that this is the case, that this is what makes sense. And the possibility one is conspiracy, propaganda, nonsense, fake news, Russia bot, all the tag, you know, but buzzwords of today. And then she goes on to point out clearly that this is nothing new, that as I pointed out in my show yesterday, that Syria is not about ISIS. Syria is not about protecting civilians from a maniacal leader. They have wanted and had designs to carry out regime change in Syria for decades, if not longer. And she lists many very clear examples of that, which I'll have links to in the show notes after the show is over. One of them being a 2006, well before the proxy war, or excuse me, the civil war, which is a proxy war, the 2006 WikiLeaks cable, where U.S. government was exploring possible factions to use against Assad and ways in which PSYOPs could be used to ensure widespread violence. By the way, I shouldn't have to note that WikiLeaks information has yet to a single time be proven to be false. So factually, 2006 cable showing the government speaking amongst themselves about how to manipulate perception in regard to Syria. Another one is a declassified CIA memo from 1986, which we've also pointed out in the past, exploring ways in which sectarian tensions can be inflamed to provoke a violent uprising in Syria. Understanding that, you know, the religious extremist concept here exists because of U.S. intervention. The reality is Syria was a very open-minded state in regard to religion. Christians and Muslims living in peace and harmony, respectively, as much as any real democratic city really can. As you know, more so than we're seeing in the United States right now. And all of the problems we're seeing there today are due to the destabilization efforts, as we can see outlined in their very memos. A clip from General Wesley Clark we just showed yesterday, outlining the overthrow of 7 countries in 5 years, one of them being Syria. A clip from former Foreign Minister of France stating in plain language that he was informed by British government insiders in 2009 that a violent Syrian uprising was being planned 2 years before the violence erupted. An article featuring a video of the former Qatari prime minister stating on record that the U.S. and its allies were involved in the violence from the very beginning. There's an article from May of 2012 reporting on some of the extremely suspicious provocations that led to the outbreak of widespread violence in Syria. Another one from March 2011 showing the same thing. And another one from December 2011. All these links will be in the show notes for you to check out for yourselves. They have wanted this for a long time. And all of this today is a justification for the same thing they've been trying to accomplish for decades. The reality here, as I pointed out in the beginning, their efforts to force this chemical narrative is getting very desperate. And that has to show you that we're getting through to some degree. What we're doing here is reaching people. And they're starting to go, wait a minute. This is a lot of information showing they've been doing this for a long time. And all the, and their past events were fabricated and lied about and they knew it. So why should we trust them today? Why does it make sense for Assad and Russia to carry out a chemical attack when they're about to win the war? What does it make sense? But because they just want to force the narrative. It's desperate. And we have to begin to see that as Nikki Haley pretends to be able to predict the future. Moving on to the next story, coming from RT.com, another interesting article in regard to Israel. There's a lot of interesting things today in this episode about Israel and lies being revealed and crimes being admitted to and also being deleted from the internet. The first one entitled Israel admits 200 plus strikes against, quote, Iranian targets in Syria over 18 months. Now, there's context to this story of why they admitted it. Obviously, in their mind, they're justified to attack anywhere in the world, as we just reported yesterday, that they've said that anywhere Iran happens to be, that they're justified in striking out, even though that's a direct violation of international law and sovereignty of the states that they're striking. But I guess they're allowed to because they're Israel. Now they're admitting that 200 plus strikes in Syria over 18 months, which I should point out that when people responded to in the past saying, oh, well, they were hit first by Iran and they simply responded. Well, guess what? Israel's now admitting that that was in fact not the case, that they have been openly and unilaterally and first attacking Syria simply because they claimed Iran was in these locations, many of which have been shown verifiably to not even be the case. So the Israeli military has admitted over the past 18 months, it carried out more than 200 strikes in Syria, which it claimed destroyed hundreds of alleged Iranian targets, which can ultimately not be proved. Accusing Tehran of constant attempts to gain a foothold in Syria and potentially deploy tens of thousands of soldiers on the ground, the IDF on Tuesday said it carried out attacks against at least 202 Iranian targets, admitting it themselves, on the neighbor's soil. Overall, 792 bombs and missiles were launched at Syria since 2017, many of which, as I just pointed out, were times where they struck first, attacking Syria, to which maybe Iran or Syria had responded, and regardless, they claimed self-defense. And this is the point. Admitting to this, and understand, these are, by international law, by the UN standards, illegal violations. Violations of international law. They are illegal strikes. Now, on Tuesday, Syrian air defense systems responded to yet another attack on targets located in the Hama and Latakia provinces. The raid, which Sana'a news agency pinned on Israel, left two dead and at least four others wounded. Now, we discovered this was shared by one of my viewers in TLEV Research and Review yesterday as the story was breaking, to which we reported on following that. Israeli warplanes attacked areas near Syrian city of Hama. And this is a very interesting story. And clearly this is one that is, you know, like I pointed out during the show, that these always tend to happen while there's bigger news taking place. So they're not to be held accountable. People ignore it, as has happened in the past. And they're only now seeming to admit to 200 plus strikes, just like this, that they earlier denied, which is very interesting. Now, the attack comes just one day after Israeli officials began taking up new escalations, or talking up new escalations against Syria. Syria offered few details on what exactly was hit or who the victims were, which is interesting. As we pointed out previously, Syria sometimes does hold back on even saying that Israel was involved, even though that is the case. So we always have to do our due diligence. They did, however, report through their state media outlet that air defenses were deployed and had successfully intercepted several Israeli rockets. They also reported air defenses active at Tartus, which is significant as Tartus province plays host to the Russian naval base in Syria. And Russia has long warned Israel not to make incursions anywhere near that area. Israeli officials were talking about ignoring previous deals with Russia recently, which we noted on. So this may be that in effect, which is a big step in the wrong direction. In this latest attack, Israel has not commented, as Israel rarely acknowledges carrying out these attacks in Syria specifically, directly following the attack. But Damascus has repeatedly accused the Jewish state of violating its sovereignty and aiding the terrorists, which they pretend to call rebels today. And as if to completely follow up on that, a very interesting report coming out of RT News entitled, Did IDF Just Admit Giving Weapons to Islamists in Syria? Explosive Israeli News Report Vanishes. Very interesting report here. And it does, in fact, do just that, confirming that they provided weapons to the Syrian rebels, knowing that these are extremists. Now, the IDF has confirmed that it provided weapons to Islamist rebels in Syria's Golan Heights, according to the Jerusalem Post. However, the article was removed without explanation hours after being published. The report, IDF confirms Israel provided light weapons to Syrian rebels, claimed that the Israeli military acknowledged for the first time that it had provided money, weapons, and ammunition to militants operating near the border with Israel. The article was removed shortly after being published, but a version of the article was archived. And the IDF told RT that it would not comment on the story, and the Jerusalem Post has not even responded to inquiry asking why the article was pulled. Now, this was brought to my attention today by Brian Richman, who I always recommend you check out his channel. He's someone that I talk to regularly, and he archived this himself and sent this to us. And then I actually found this as well on RT, and this is an interesting story to see. And so lucky for you, we do have that archived article for you to read for yourself in the show notes right this moment. And this is a very important thing to understand, is that there's a reason this was published and then pulled. And this is, in fact, a true story. From the Jerusalem Post, IDF confirms Israel provided light weapons to Syrian rebels. Of course, like we said, understanding that Syrian rebels means terrorists, extremists, that they're arming and funding against the Syrian government, the sovereign Syrian government. Now, while the IDF maintains that it was in this article, which they recently pulled, understand, they did maintain, quoted by the Jerusalem Post, that they were not intervening in Syria's civil war, quote, or more accurately, Syria's battle against the illegal occupation of its sovereign land by the U.S., Turkey, and Israel. On Monday, it confirmed that Israel had been regularly supplying Syrian rebels near its border with light weapons and ammunition, which I probably argue, you know, more than just light weapons and ammunition, but that being said, in order to defend themselves from attacks and a substantial amount of cash to buy additional arms. Are there any other things they'd like to buy with the money they just give them? Probably a level of plausible deniability. Say, oh, we didn't buy those chemical weapons for them. We just gave them the money to buy it. And by rebels, we now know that means very, you know, the very extremists that the U.S. is pretending to fight while they all fund, arm, and protect them instead. According to reports, Israel has been arming at least 7 different extremist groups in Syria's Golan Heights, including the Fersan al-Julan rebel group, which had around 400 fighters and had been given an estimated $5,000 per month by Israel, which is quite a lot of money in this area. Now, understand, too, that this is nothing new. We reported on this of Israel giving medical support to the jihadists there, the extremists that are fighting the Syrian government. This is nothing new. But now they're admitting to it and on record doing so. Israel has warned against Iran's entrenchment in Syria and has stressed time and time again that Syrian soil cannot serve as a forward operating base to Iran, somehow feeling that they have the right to outright claim that they can say what happens on Syrian soil. We have to recognize this dynamic. This is not the case. Nobody could come to the United States and say, you can't allow Israel to launch missiles from Alaska like they're currently doing. They can't do that because it's their choice. Of course, the Americans, like myself, are very unhappy about that, and because it has nothing to do with what we want for this country, but they can't do this to Syria. They have no right, legally, internationally, to tell them, you can't allow Iran to be there. And then saying, because they're there is the entire premise, or even the phantom of them being there, a lie, is the entire premise for all of our illegal aggressions against Syria. This is how this works, and we have to recognize this. Now, this is a very important article we should share, that they've admitted to this. They've admitted now to illegal airstrikes on Syria and admitted to funding the very rebels, which we've proven are extremists, the very Al-Qaeda, ISIS, al-Nusra groups, which they are using to fight against Syria. Very important information here. And that's likely why it was pulled. Some mistake happened and they quickly pulled it down. So thank you to Brian Richman for archiving this and sending us this to keep and make sure we remain, continue to share so they don't hide it and pretend it never happened. Very important story, so thank you to Brian Richman. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, another very important one that is one that really gets under my skin, which I've reported on quite a bit. This one really takes the cake. This one entitled, Israel Plans to Sell Freedom Flotilla Boats and Give the Money to Illegal Settlers. This is a very real story and a very disgusting story. And we'll get into some of the details of just how disgusting this truly is. And how illegal this truly is in occupied Palestine. Israel plans to sell 4 boats seized while sailing towards the besieged Gaza Strip and distribute the funds among 2 settler families, according to local Israeli newspapers that they've reported on. Understand, first of all, that this was in international waters. Israel pirated these ships in international waters, which is a violation of international law, stole these ships with the people on board, took them back to Israel, aggressively made people bleed, attacked people, tasered them, held them at gunpoint, stole half of what they had, and now they're stealing their ships and selling them and giving to Israeli families. Really, they understand what's happening here. If this had happened in Syria or Iran, understand how this would be played differently. You're not going to hear this in the mainstream media. Israel has in recent weeks confiscated 4 boats, apparently. Not just the 2 that I've reported on, but 4 coming from Europe in an effort to break the Israeli Navy blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip. Currently not allowing ships to come in or out. This is a prison, in fact. Palestinians are not allowed to leave. They will stop them and send them back. Even people that are in desperate need of medical attention, they will take them back and not allow them to reach what they're trying to do. According to the paper that reported this in the beginning, the court has heard the opinion of senior naval and intelligence officers who said the boat's ownership would have been transferred to Hamas if it had reached Gaza. A lot of hypotheticals there. Seems to align with Nikki Haley saying that she can predict the future. Apparently, the Israelis can predict the future as well, knowing that this would have happened if it would have reached Gaza. But it didn't reach Gaza because they hijacked it in the open seas and towed it back to Israel anyway. And they're claiming that they know that they would have transferred to Hamas if it had reached Gaza, and somehow justifies their illegal hijacking of these boats. Just like they're claiming they know Iran was in these places and they know they're allowed to illegally strike Syria just because they were there. Seems like they just have no regard for international law. And I think that's pretty common knowledge to those that watch this show. And of course, because the UN and the US ignore their actions, they continue to take them, illegally violating the rights of Palestinians and other people alike, including Joe Meter, who was on the USS Liberty all those years ago when Israel attacked the US ship, and who was hijacked and kept in a prison in Israel with no peep from the mainstream media or Trump. As he addressed some other people around the world, just ignored this fact. Even a famous singer was hijacked and kept in prison, and no one talks about it. Where are the governments of all these other people who are being illegally held by Israel? Why aren't they speaking out? What is it that allows Israel to get away with things like this? Not from me. Not from you guys. We will not allow Israel to get away with this. We will continue to speak out about the gross violation of human rights and international law. These are war crimes. The Israeli army announced that it is holding the boats in the port of Ashdod, which is where it towed the people and the boats alike, in central Israel. Both families claim, involved in this, that they're going to give the money to, that they had members who were killed in attacks, through which the court claimed to have found direct connections to Hamas, adding that the money obtained from the sale of the boats will probably not exceed several thousand shekels. But the two families see the decision as important on principle. Realizing that they're saying they can find a backward connection to these families' attacks to Hamas, which may be the case, and because they hypothetically say if the boats had made it there, that they didn't, that they hijacked in mid-sea, that because they were going to sell them to Hamas, now that seems fair to take that and give it to the families. Think about the logic here. This is really bending over backward to just drive home the point that they can do whatever they want to anyone they want. And not only will the UN or the US not say a word, they will blatantly ignore it. But we can't allow that to happen. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com. Another very important one in regard to Israel, but this time in regard to the United States and NASA and American secrets, intelligence community secrets, and things that maybe we wouldn't want Israel to know, but now they're going to have access to. According to this article entitled Bill Would Force NASA Cooperation with Israel Despite History of Israeli Espionage. Just the more this continues to increase, it becomes increasingly difficult to ignore the very clear influence that Israel has over American politics. And many have spoken out about this, the dual citizenship of our politicians, their influence over our policies in general, at home and around the world. It's becoming hard to ignore. And this is even more interesting in regard to NASA itself and how they're working their way in. And it's a very dangerous reality to see what they're doing to Palestinians and everyone alike around the world and hijacking boats and bombing foreign countries. Well, just like the U.S. government is, but now they're working in tandem. This is alarming. So a bill that was passed into the U.S. Senate in early August, which is currently under consideration by the House, which means it hasn't happened yet, but I would argue it's very clearly going to, as things with, you know, pro-Israel concepts fly through Congress. while things that are much more important to Americans seem to get stalled up and fought over back and forth by the two-party paradigm. But so it would mandate that NASA work closely with the Israel Space Agency, the ISA, despite the fact that such cooperation in the past was used by Israel to steal U.S. state secrets, verifiably. We've even shown in the past that Israel, their entire ambiguous nuclear program, which they very much do have, started from stealing nuclear technology from the United States. But it gets ignored. Ask yourself why. The provision is tucked within the bill titled United States-Israeli Security Assistance Authorization Act of 2018, which would also provide Israel with $38 billion in U.S. military aid over a 10-year period. And understand, yes, that's in addition to the already $10.5 million a day that we give Israel right this moment. Now, this is the largest military aid package in U.S. history. Mint Press News previously reported that this massive aid package translates into approximately $23,000 every year for every Israeli family. However, the provision pertaining to NASA has largely gone unreported. Now, I want to quickly clarify, as I said, that the $38 billion a year would not, I guess, not necessarily be in addition to the $10.5 million, as this is the new evolution of that same concept. But clearly, this is an increasing concept of funds. I just want to make that very clear, not to say on top of that. But we've already had additions added to this. The reality of right now sending $10.5 million a day to Israel from your tax dollars should be enough. But now adding this into further bills and laws and for the American people should be very alarming to us. The reality that this is moving forward, even as these things are happening, even as they're getting international damnation for what they're doing to the Palestinian people, as artists are turning down their festivals and things happening in Israel because of what they're doing, the United States is still doubling down on support for them, just like they're doing with Saudi Arabia. Again, ask yourself why. Now, as the Trump administration has shown, the national security of the United States, the national security and of Israel have become profoundly intertwined, as President Trump's campaign promises of America first quickly devolved into Israel first, thanks largely to the influence of Trump's largest donor, Zionist billionaire Sheldon Adelson. Thus, concerns about Israeli espionage seem to be of little import to the current administration, as well as to many members of Congress, as we pointed out, many, many of which are dual citizenship, Israeli and American, particularly those greatly influenced by powerful organizations of the Israeli lobby, such as the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or APEC. These things need to begin to resonate with people. And as always, this should not be taken as a concept that every single Jewish person in the world is a problem. There's never the case to strike everyone with a broad brush. But the reality here is that the Zionist-controlled government of Israel is very, very quickly influencing and infiltrating American politics and your tax dollars. And that should be alarming to all of us. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com. This one is interesting, involving your data from home, entitled, Google Notifies Users of Court-Ordered Data, Demands in Secret, FBI Investigation. Now, this is one that I'm going to follow up more with TLAV Research and Review following this show, but I just want to quickly point out, because there's a lot involved in this story, but dozens of people, possibly more, have received an email from Google informing them that the internet giant responded to a court-ordered FBI demand for the release of their data, according to Motherboard, citing several people who claim to have received the email. The notice did not say whether Google had already released the requested information to FBI, so it likely is already, in my opinion, already gone. Several users on Reddit, Twitter, and hack forums have reported receiving the email, which apparently reads in part, quote, Google received and responded to legal process issued by Federal Bureau of Investigation, Eastern District of Kentucky, compelling the release of information related to your Google account. Now, there's a lot of information into this and the case behind it, which I'll get into following this show, if you'd like to stay tuned for TLAV Research and Review. But the reality here that I want to point out is that you have no right of privacy with these companies. The FBI, the government, are greatly involved with what they're doing. Alphabet, the parent company of these groups, are directly tied in with the government, as they are individually are. But the reality here is that your information is likely already in their hands, and all they need to simply do is send you an email saying, guess what, all of your data that we've had since the moment you joined, or since the moment you've been using Google since you were a child, is now in the hands of the FBI. Sorry. This is the reality, and it's important that we recognize this, how clearly connected they are with the government. Moving on to the final story of the day, and one that I find incredibly important that I've discussed many times, which is more the reason why I continue to say that regardless of why you think you should vote, your vote today simply no longer matters, because they have levers all along the process to which they can use to manipulate the end result. That's important to recognize. This article coming from the freethoughtproject.com entitled Voters in Midterm Elections Report Watching Their Ballots Mysteriously Switch to Other Candidates. This is something we reported on numerous times, from all the way back from Clint Curtis, I'll make sure and include the link in the show notes, testifying in front of Congress about how he was paid to manipulate voting machines and nothing ever happened. Testified in front of Congress. On record, the video's been played hundreds of thousands of times and nothing ever happened. They move forward using the very same machines the next election. This is not new news. We've already shown that Princeton did a study over and over and over about people that these machines have been hacked. This doesn't take into account the many other ways, and I'm talking about levers through the system, of manipulating your vote in general. So it simply does not matter. Or manipulating the entire process so the people you're voting for are selected previously anyway. Over and over and over we show this. This was even reported out by some mainstream outlets locally. Not that that should make it any more legitimate, but the reality is this is happening, and we've shown it time and time again. And of course, they will always say, oh, it's probably a glitch, as if that always sums up the problem. Just a glitch. Looks like a mistake happened. Oh, well. But no, I think we realize what's actually happening here. So it says a rather shocking but not surprising report this week came out of Georgia reveals the unsettling state of America's election and voting system. Voters in Georgia are now reporting that after they confirm their votes, they watch on the screen as their ballot mysteriously switches to the opposite candidate. Later this month, a federal judge will hear the case against the Georgia government for their utter failure at maintaining sound election processes and their lack of maintaining a paper ballot record as well, which is an important aspect. There's a lot of different things behind this as well, which we'll get into following this show. But the reality here, which we've shown many times over, is that your vote does not matter in our process today. This claim, this false idea of democracy or republic or a constitutional republic or whatever you think that we may have in this country is clearly not the fact. We have an authoritarian government. This is an oligarchy. We use any number of words that may make sense in this regard, who choose for you and let you think like a child in a fake steering wheel in the back of his parents' car, thinking he's driving the car, that you are making a difference. The reality is what we're doing here is making a difference, calling attention to the reality of the deceptions taking place. And there's much more around that we could be doing. But before we can get any really real change happen, we need to bring people on board and make them aware of what's really going on. Make them aware of how they're being deceived. Get enough people involved. And that's why we're seeing things change. That's why we're seeing them drag their feet on what's taking place in Syria. That's why we're seeing the media forced to cover what's happening in Yemen. That's why we're seeing Spain pull back on their deal of supplying the Saudi Arabian nation with weapons. Because we're making a difference. We're breaking through the cracks and showing people what's really happening. So stay the course. Continue calling this stuff out. Don't back down. Make an effort every single day to spread this information and get the truth out there. And make sure you do your own research, as I say every single show. That is imperative. Don't just trust me. Don't trust anyone out there. Do your own due diligence every single day. I can't stress that enough. So make sure you stay tuned after the show for follow-ups on some of these articles and many other things that I have to discuss for the next couple hours as I rant away with TLAV Research and Review. And make sure you check out the sources and independent in the show notes below, the independent sources, because I always make sure and leave everything there for you to do your own due diligence. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.